Here in the studio, we're watching the Argentina and England game, which this is exciting. This is when it gets really exciting in the World Cup. You end up with two teams that have played 90 minutes plus a 30-minute mini game, and then at the end of that, they end up going to penalties. And I'm going to tell you, this is going to get exciting. Penalty kicks, it's entire careers turn around because of them. Anyway, one of the things we're going to do in our next hour is we're going to talk with Marco Lopez. Marcos Lopez is the outreach and coalitions director for NPRI and a good dude. And one of the things we're going to talk about is what happens in February when this new legislature and the new governor, they all come together in Carson City. Are we going to end up getting anything done? I mean, I'm worried we're going to have all these new components and nothing new is going to happen. Nothing's going to happen on school choice. Nothing's going to happen on safety of our kids in schools. And that really nothing will end up happening. And that's what's so sad about this. By the way, Argentina and the Netherlands, the winner of this game goes to the semifinals of the World Cup in Doha, Qatar. And this is amazing. This is amazing. I believe England has just won. I think so. Yeah, they have just won. So they will end up moving to the semifinals. So anyway, we'll keep track of that. But getting back to Marcos Lopez, that he'll be joining us coming up at 2:05. One of the things we're going to do is talk about the momentum going into a session. And is anything going to change on the part of Democrats now if they have to deal not with Steve Sisolak, but with Joe Lombardo? And Joe Lombardo has said, I want to be the education president or governor, and I want to see him do it. For the good of our community, I really want to see him do it. I just know how the Democrats can be, and they are power-crazed, and they treat the Republicans like, old stepchildren. I'm hoping something will change, but I got to tell you, everything I have seen so far, there is no indication that there's going to be any give on the part of the Dems. New governor, that's fine. He wants to be the education governor. That's great. But it's quite another thing to actually get something done and to get people that actually can take you seriously and end up negotiating. It is now official. And it's not England, it's Argentina. Sorry about that. I had that wrong. Argentina and the Netherlands. Sorry about that. They look like English unis. Sorry about that. I didn't look at the graphic. Stay where you are. More to do as we continue right here on AM 670 KMZQ, where news is next.
With a question for my senior friends. Have you experienced hearing loss? Have you had trouble hearing in crowded places like bars and restaurants? I know just what you're talking about. For years, I struggled to hear conversations with friends sitting right next to me. I'd say, huh? Or what? It became embarrassing. So I asked Steve Romeo at Quality Hearing Aids to test my hearing, and the results told me what I already knew. Not only did I have hearing loss, but there were words I could hear but not understand. Steve fitted me with new state-of-the-art hearing aids, and the difference has been incredible. And now, with the addition of Dr. Matthew Lingman, the folks at Quality Hearing Aids are able to super serve their clients at both locations. If hearing loss is causing you to miss out on conversations, do what I did. Call Quality Hearing Aids at 702-369-1321. That's 702-369-1321. Or check them out at QHALV.com. That's QHALV.com. And tell them Kevin Wall sent you.
Live from the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa Studios.
From the world-famous Las Vegas Strip.
AM 670 KMCQ, Las Vegas.
Locally owned and operated by Kent Broadcasting and Digital Outdoor.
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Keith Peters reporting. Correspondent Mary Claire Jelinek reports Senator Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona is switching from being a Democrat to an independent.
What it is really more about her than the Senate. It's not going to change functionally the operations of the Senate or the Democrats' majority. She hasn't said specifically that she will caucus with the Democrats, but she has said that she will not caucus with the Republicans.
Jelinek reports that the change makes sense.
She doesn't really fit into either party. She is, I think, maybe an independent in the truest sense of the word, which is she agrees with the Democrats some of the time and she agrees with the Republicans some of the time.
Sinema writes in a newspaper column that she's declaring my independence from the broken partisan system in Washington. The Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals has blocked a Biden administration order that demanded that doctors with religious reservations perform sex change operations in violation of their deeply held beliefs. The Daily Caller reports the decision follows a Fifth Circuit opinion from August of this year that struck down a reading of the Affordable Care Act requiring every doctor to provide sex change operations regardless of religious conviction. The head of NATO has expressed worry that the fighting in Ukraine could spin out of control and become a war between Russia and NATO. Correspondent Rita Foley reports on the NATO leaders' fears.
NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg says there is no doubt that a full-fledged war is a possibility, adding that it's important to avoid a conflict that involves more countries in Europe and becomes, he says, a full-fledged war in Europe.
The Kremlin has accused NATO allies of effectively becoming a party to the conflict by giving Ukraine weapons, training its troops, and feeding military intelligence to attack Russian forces. On Wall Street, the Dow down by 305 points. More on these stories at townhall.com.
Your family depends on your income, and something happened to you, what would happen to them? You need life insurance, and SelectQuote can help you get it at a price you can afford.
SelectQuote found Jacob, 40, who's in excellent health, a 10-year, $500,000 policy for only $19 a month.
Not in perfect health? Don't worry.
SelectQuote found Tanya, 40, who has type 2 diabetes, a 10-year, $500,000 policy for only $32 a month.
We shop companies like Protective, Prudential, American General, and others to find you the company with the best rates. Give your family the security they need at a price you can afford.
For your free quote, call 1-800-880-7474. That's 1-800-880-7474. Or go to SelectQuote.com. That's 1-800-880-7474.
SelectQuote. We shop, you save.
Get full details on the example policies at selectquote.com/commercials. Your premium could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
Hi, this is Mark Thomas. Question, are you a business owner? Do you like free government money? If so, listen up. The federal government has promised over $135 billion in tax refunds for small and medium-sized businesses that kept employees on payroll through COVID. Business owners are eligible for the Employee Retention Credit, even if they received PPP funds. RefundsPro.com specializes in cutting through the red tape of qualifying for this government program to make it quick and easy. RefundsPro does all the heavy lifting, and most refunds are over $100,000. Couldn't you use that money right about now? There's no downside to apply and absolutely no fees unless you receive a refund. RefundsPro.com has helped hundreds of businesses qualify. And the best part? You don't have to pay a penny back to the government. This is as close as it gets to free government money. There is a deadline, so visit RefundsPro.com and get started before it's too late. Visit RefundsPro.com. That's RefundsPro.com.
It's 204. This is a KMCQ News Flash. I'm Jim Dallas. The city of Henderson is interested in buying Station Casino's Fiesta Henderson site. Council members will consider plans on Tuesday to buy the 35-acre site for $32 million. That's well below its appraised value of more than $56 million. City officials say they'd like to build an indoor recreational facility on the site. Fiesta Henderson had been closed since the beginning of the pandemic, and the hotel casino was recently demolished. The parking garage still stands, saved by the wrecking ball at the city's request. Now, it could be considered a Las Vegas residency. The Savannah Bananas have added a second date to their May visit at Las Vegas Ballpark. The wacky touring baseball troupe will now play May 19th and the 20th of next year, saying they added May 20th due to high ticket demands. Now, the team has, in fact, added 7 more games onto its Banana Bowl World Tour, bringing the number of games to 80 in the season of 2023. Now, despite their wacky nature, the Bananas can play ball. Many of them have played in college or in minor league baseball.
KMCQ on-time traffic is powered by Meineke Car Care Centers.
Right now, get a basic oil change for only $29.95. Meineke, doing car care right.
Several new crashes on area roadways. Southbound Valley View, that's at Sahara. Eastbound Harmon at Las Vegas Boulevard. Southbound Rainbow at Lake Mead. That's a new one. Also expect some slowing on the 15 through the resort area at Spring Mountain, southbound 15.
Gather round. I want you to know that the movement we started is only just beginning. There's never been anything like it. The belief that a nation must serve its citizens will not dwindle, but instead only grow stronger by the day. As long as the American people hold in their hearts deep and devoted love of country, then there is nothing that this nation cannot achieve.
Check it out.
I go from this majestic place with a loyal and joyful heart, an optimistic spirit, and a supreme confidence that for our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
It ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done.
Ladies and gentlemen, Kevin Wall.
So good to have you with us. It's hour number 3 of Live and Local. Coming up in February, we've got the next, every other year session of the Nevada legislature. And everybody and their brother during the campaign was talking about education. They were talking about the fact that we need to improve our schools. We need to improve the performance of our kids. The question is anything going to change? Let's check in with Marcos Lopez. He's the Outreach and Coalitions Director for Nevada Policy Research Institute, better known as NPRI. Marcos, how you been, my friend?
I've been well, Kevin. Just excited for the legislative session, even though the holidays are coming. The pre-work to it is just beginning. Everything is coming into shape of what this kind of might look like, what the topics will be discussed. And to your point, education is forefront, with Lombardo saying he wants to be the education governor. So I'm looking forward to it. I think this is the first opportunity to make some real progress.
What do you make of the fact that Joe Lombardo is saying he wants to be the education governor, but yet the makeup of the legislature has not changed that dramatically in our favor? What does that mean? What does that portend? Can we get something done?
I think we can. While it was disappointing in November to see so many down-ballot candidates lose, it was disappointing that we didn't gain more seats in the legislature, we are today in a better position than we were before November. Having the executive branch, having the veto power of the governor puts us in the best situation we've been in a long time to be able to advance school choice and be able to really fix the system or at least get the right pathways in place to get to where we want to be, which is an education system that delivers results, that we're not failing We're not at the bottom of the whole country for our educational outcomes. So I am very optimistic that this might go down, as we've seen in previous sessions, what is the final trade-off to advance some of these priorities. And I take the governor at his word that he does want to be the education governor. And I think that we'll see something that's an all-of-the-above approach, which is very optimistic for us, as opposed to our previous governor's approach, which was only public schools.
Yeah, yeah. Marcos Lopez joining us from NPRI. I'm just curious, what are the issues relative to education that there is at least some common ground where we can probably agree to it, maybe watered down a little bit, but still moving the ball down the field, so to speak? What are some of those issues that we can all agree upon?
So if we're talking about from Nevadans overall, I mean, Nevadans, there's broad support for opportunity scholarships, ESAs, and just providing more choice and opportunity for all parents. Within the makeup of the legislature, there'll be definitely some pushback from Democrats who do not want to see some of those programs expanded. But with the governor in our corner, there is broad hope within the movement that we will be able to get some raising of the cap for opportunity scholarship, get some new permanent funding source for it. Even educational savings accounts are on the table. If we can get something like that, that would be the holy grail of the whole movement, because it really would allow that money follows the child and the parents have better control of where they're able to send their children. But overall, there is one area in particular that we have seen bipartisan support is this TOTS grant program. For those that don't know what that is a Transforming Opportunities for Toddlers and Students. This was kind of born during the interim this past year, and it passed with bipartisan support in the interim committees that would enabled Nevadans who have children with disabilities give them greater access to more opportunities to be able to use almost in the same style of an ESA system, just with a different name, to be able to use that money for their children to find the best school and education that fits their needs. And it's working with great success.
Are other states utilizing the program?
Yeah, so we saw both, in terms of educational movement, there are states that have similar programs like this, but we've really been seeing in the last 2 to 4 years a massive move on education and school choice. Arizona and West Virginia are the ones that come to mind that have universal education savings account, which again is the holy grail for the whole school choice movement in terms of how it will enable parents to have that choice as well as drive competition to improve educational outcomes. So that is still the holy model, the holy grail that we're looking forward to achieving. And we're seeing great success in those states. And when our neighbor right next door is doing this and is achieving educational results, we should be able to join them. And I think that is where we're pushing towards.
Let me just ask you, the teachers union has always stood in the way of ESAs and school choice and even opportunity scholarships over the years. The teachers union has stood in the way of any kind of progress. Is there any evidence you've been able to see or that you've heard from relative to the governor-elect, that maybe the teachers union's ready to cooperate? Because these are things that are like 65, 70% approval when you put them, before the people.
I think the fact that they didn't endorse this elect towards the end of the last cycle shows that they're willing to come to the table. And I think the approach that we're going to see from this new administration is going to be an all-of-the-above approach. And I think when session is over, we reach the end of those 120 days starting in February, every single camp might not get everything they want, but I think we will all leave the legislative session in a better position, whether that's private schools, charter schools, public schools. I think there is great opportunity, and I think that tad bit that they did not endorse CISALAC shows that they're willing to cooperate and not be cornered to just being that Democratic mouthpiece. I think they're still going to continue pushing for some of the things that we disagree with, but in the long run, I think that it shows a willingness to come to the table and say, okay, how are we going to do this in divided government, because that's the only way we're going to move forward.
Again, joining us, Marcos Lopez, the Outreach and Coalitions Director for NPRI. He'll be up in Carson City working the room, so to speak. Let me just ask you, has anything been put in the hopper so far? I know that they have what they call BDRs, bill draft requests, and that's how legislation gets made, gets eventually passed, and becomes eventually law. Can you talk a little bit about what you know about ideas that are already being floated around Carson City?
So the BDRs, and to a little bit of background for your listeners who might not be too familiar with it, Nevada, your legislators have a certain amount of bill draft requests, is what that BDR stands for, of how many ideas they can bring forward to the legislature for consideration. We have a limit on that, which I think is advantageous because that means most of the BDRs are used up on realistic bills that have a chance of passing, and it really focuses in so you're not have a situation where Texas, for example, has unlimited amount of bills that can be introduced, and it's impossible for everyone to be able to track everything, particularly if you are a citizen of the state just trying to keep up with what's going on. So right now, the BDRs that have been turned into bills have been mostly requests from state agencies. Each agency gets a certain amount that's allocated for them. And of the bills that so far have been put out, one trend that I keep seeing across the board from all agencies deals with the rollover of leftover funds. Historically, when a budget is allocated for every 2 years, because we're on a biannual system, any money that's been allocated to certain departments or agencies or special initiatives, at the end of the year, any money that's left over is reverted back into the general fund. There seems to be a movement across all the agencies to request that any money that's left over remains in their account. I think that's generally a good idea for the simple fact that it prevents the incentive of going in, a perverse incentive of you have to spend it or you lose it. And this also allows for longer-term budgeting where, okay, if you have a little bit of money left over, you know, that might be less money we have to allocate, and encourages the agency directors and the bureaucrats at least have a little more incentive to use their money efficiently and knowing that they don't have to just spend it all at the end of the year, which is good stewardship for tax dollars.
I want to ask you about money, because money is very important when it comes to education. But the question that a lot of people are asking is, we've just thrown $500 million at education and nothing's different. Nothing's changed. Is that going to be an issue in Carson City in February? Are there people on the other side that are going to be asking for more money? And by the way, have we run out of Biden bucks? I mean, there was a whole bunch of money that came into the state relative to what I call Biden bucks. There was pandemic money that they're repurposing for education or other things. Are we going to be asking for more money for education? And do we need more money for education?
The calls for money for education will always be there. I think, generally speaking, we have enough money we spend on education. It's about how do we use that more effectively. However, when the legislature convenes, it generally seems that there is little restraint to throw more money at the problem. So it's how do we have that trade-off where we know that's going to happen, but what safeguards are we putting in place to make sure it's being spent efficiently? And what programs are we putting in there that will incentivize that spending of that money efficiently? There is a BDR or bill that was submitted already, which I found pretty interesting, that would enable a legislative auditor to go in every 5 years and audit the school districts to make sure they are spending their money adequately and that every single penny is accounted for. I think this is a wonderful idea. It is in a bill with some other things that I don't necessarily agree with, but that is a good step in the right direction, that we have a regular audit in place every 5 years. Going back to the Biden bucks, the state still has a lot of money, and we have a lot of money that we've collected just off taxes. In generally, we're expected to have a surplus of an extra $1 billion moving into this legislative session, and that's just because this year has been a killer in terms of the economy bouncing back, in terms of gaming, as well as the downside, which is inflation, also means that the government collects more money because you're spending more money on things and their percentage keeps getting bigger and bigger. So it's kind of a double-edged sword there. The Biden bucks in particular, however, those do have a certain deadline of what time they can be used. So unless Congress comes in, remove some of those strings and deadlines are attached to it and what they can be spent on. We are approaching a time where those Biden bucks will dry up just because we'll reach that deadline where they can be used.
One of the programs that I think is absolutely amazing, and I want to see so much more of it, was created during the pandemic as parents looked for options, and that option is micro-schooling. First of all, explain what micro-schooling is. I know there's one up in North Las Vegas that has been highly successful. Can you talk a little bit about what they are and how they work, and are we going to see more of them?
I think we will be seeing more of them. So this new phenomenon is both new and not new, right? So micro-schooling is homeschooling, but at a more accessible way for most parents. Because most parents, the first time they hear about homeschooling, they think, oh, I have to be at home, I have to do all the training and schooling with my child one-on-one. And there might be a lot of things that a parent themselves do not have the expertise in. What's unique about micro-schooling is that these are all homeschooling opt-outs that are basically gathered together, born out of the COVID pandemic, where they would have, you know, teachers, former public school teachers, get together and try new innovative ways to reach better educational outcomes. Because people didn't just want to have their kids at home staring at a computer screen. We know that while that works for some students, most students have to be in an environment where it's conducive to educational growth. So I definitely believe we're going to keep seeing this. And we're seeing an exodus from CCSD, and I believe a big driver of that has been the rise of micro-schooling and alternative methods for education. And they're all over the place. I mean, I last week went and visited 4 to 5 different micro-schools, and I was just blown away by the different innovative ways they're going about teaching education. Because this whole educational model we have today is outdated. You know, this was all born 100 years ago of how do we teach people to have enough skills to be able to go work at a factory and just kind of clock in and clock out. The whole system, the bells, the periods, that all goes into alignment of how do we condition individuals to go to school to just be able to work at a factory. The entire workforce has changed from then. Right now, employers are looking for critical thinking. They're looking for a lot of different soft skills that we need to nurture in our students moving forward to make them competitive. And these micro schools are leading the way in those methods.
And by the way, is it cheaper to do a micro school or to do a public school?
So it depends on the micro school. But many of the micro schools, when I've asked them, you know, how much is tuition for your school? I mean, a lot of them were in like the $4,000 to $5,000 range, which is just under half of what the public school currently spends.
Wow.
Wow. Education.
So in other words, we could actually save money by going to more micro-schooling. Is that right?
We could definitely save money. And more importantly, it's fundamentally what are the growth and educational outcomes that we are seeing. And, you know, I'll take a micro-schooler in terms of reading, mathematics, and even social skills over a public school student anytime.
Wow. I love that. What is the status of micro-schooling now? Is it getting any state aid at all?
No. So the most state aid that we've seen is probably on the TOTS grant program that I mentioned earlier. And that's not necessarily direct aid. It's more funds are available for parents of children with disabilities that they have access to this and kind of in an ESA kind of format. They're able to use that money to be able to figure out whatever needs is best for their child. But for the most part, there is zero state money going to this. And for most micro schools, that's how they would like to keep it, because with state money comes state strings. And I think we've kind of seen in the rise of charter schools that charter schools still perform much better than all their public peers. But the way that the development has gone, the more they've gotten state funding, the more strings and barriers to being innovative in how they educate their children, we've seen.
Marcos, I know that you're going to be working the halls of Carson City come February. If folks want to know more about what you're up to and what the folks at NPRI are up to relative to education, relative to the legislature, which begins in February, how can they find you? How can they reach out to you?
So the best way is to go to nevadapolicy.org, and on there, the first thing you'll be prompted to is to get update with our mailings. We're really driving that, but once legislative session begins, once a week on Friday, I will have a weekly phone call, which will just go over what happened that week at the legislative session, and then on the last Friday of each month during session, we will have a longer webinar program, which we'll be talking about the past month, but more importantly, we'll feature interviews with legislative members, and we'll be talking about what they're seeing behind the scenes, what's going on in their committee, and what they're driving and pushing for. We really want to drive transparency in Carson City and get as many people informed and involved with what's going on.
Marcos, you and I may not be able to get together.